check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Not doing too shabby. You know, just rocking and rolling, living the American dream. I will say it's getting cold. Getting cold in my neck of the woods. It's chilling down a little bit.
Yeah, same here. And by chilling down, I mean it's in the 50s, which feels like Arctic for here. Same. I'm actually wearing a sweatshirt today. And it's kind of unusual. I actually told Monica this morning, or a little bit ago, yeah, no, you're going to have to break down, probably turn that heat on pretty soon. She's like hell. So we'll see how that goes. She's all about the electric bill with the heat. So
on our next episode, Dave will have to have a couple of his toes amputated due to frostbite.
Yeah. Yeah. It's back in my office. It gets even more chilly because I've got a big, big patio doors, big sliding patio doors. So that lets a lot of cool in. And it's like they're right behind my desk. So it's like not as bad really up through there. Then I come back here and I'm like, woohoo. So I put a sweatshirt on. I'm good though. I'm covered. It's funny because I ran to the store earlier and I was just wearing, you know, just some joggers and a t-shirt. And like, it was like, I think it was 52 out is what the car was saying. And like, everybody's walking around with these heavy coats and this and that. And I'm like, ugh, y'all wouldn't survive a 1 week in my native Indiana. It's like,
Listen, I speaking of Indiana, I went to Indiana last year for November for Thanksgiving to visit family. And, you know, living in Florida, you know, it gets down into the 60s and I'm like, ooh, it's getting a little nippy. Went to Indiana and it was in the 30s and I was like, I was dying. I was so cold the entire time I was there.
Yeah. I have definitely acclimated to this. I hate cold. I hate cold. I hate snow.
Yeah.
I don't want any part of it. It just, ugh. Everything about it. I don't know how I lived in Indiana for so long, but alas, this is not a weather podcast. It's not like a couple of old guys yelling at the clouds here.
That's right.
But no, this is a horror podcast. And today we are reviewing the movie Black Cab, which is available on Shudder right now. And we're also going to talk, well, let's just jump right into it. Let's just talk about this. We're going to talk non-spoiler, just for a little bit, about Creep Tapes. We have talked about this. Ike and I are both huge fans of the two Creep movies, Creep 1, Creep 2. Very simple. And we've long hailed, and if you've listened to this podcast, you have known that we've said it many times. You know, it's like, why do more people not talk about the Creep movies? We don't get it, you don't get it discussed enough, especially, you know, even when found footage films are talked about, they just don't seem to get the respect that we feel they deserve. Very much hoping that now that there's some new material out there, some new material on Shudder, and in the series format, this is very cool, that maybe this will get people acknowledging the franchise and everything else. Now, again, we're not going to give spoilers on this, but it's, to be fair, there's not a lot of, it's not a lot of spoiler you can give per se. If you understand and have seen the Creep films and understand the format of the films, you understand the format of the series. So at least so far, same concept, but it's broke down into episodes. I think there's going to be six total. They dropped the first two off the bat Friday, and each episode focuses on a different victim. And I like how they do that. I wondered how that was going to work. It does very much feel like we talked about it, right? In the first Creep film, you get a shot of his video collection, right? That it's not his first time doing it. He's done this many times. It's in the opening of the Creep tapes. It shows those videos. So the series is diving into, there's not really a timeline format, but we assume that these, I assume at least, that these are probably before the first Creep film, right? These are kind of him developing, you know, whatever. Now, the first episode, episode one, is titled Mike. Each episode is titled for the victim in the episode. So Mike is in the first episode. Again, not giving a lot of spoilers, but this episode one, I follows very much follows that classic creep format of him inviting someone in to film. In this case, with the presumption that he's filming an audition tape for a for an acting school,
Yeah.
and then he's paying this guy to come in and film it for him, and stuff ensues. This episode one to me feels very much straight out of the Creep 1 and Creep 2 format, but I fully enjoyed it. It was very fun. And like, what did you think of episode 1?
Yeah, I think the episode one is sort of a I would honestly call it like a soft launch into like what the creep is. And like you said, the first movie, and this is again spoiler free. If you've seen the movies, you might be aware that a wolf mask plays a part and part of those movies, and that's all I'm gonna say. And that mask does make a reprisal at some point, which is interesting little connection. But like you said, it's interesting how the whole process is set up. Obviously, in the original Creep movies, they do allude to that he has done this before, and so there being tapes and other versions of this is very on brand for kind of what's been discussed already within universe. It's very interesting. I think that it's clever on how they're doing it. It's very subtle. And like you said, the first two episodes, specifically, we're talking episode one, which was Mike, very, very similar to the first movie. Like I would almost say that if you condense down the first movie into like a 30-minute little snippet, Mike would be a pretty good offer to that. Now, I will say the original Creep movie is longer. I think it's only like an hour and 20 minutes. But it is very superb, and I'm not saying that you could have condensed it down, because I think that the length of that film is perfect. But I think that if you were to condense it down, you would get Mike.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the head. Mike is, I think, is the episode they felt like they needed to do to just give this introduction to those who may not have seen the movies, because it follows the film formats like an outline. It gives you a feel for what this is and what this world is. So I feel like that you're right. That's what it is. It's kind of this introduction. Not to say it's not good, because it is, but it's very much like the films. Now, let's just move on to episode two. Episode two is titled Elliot. Now, this man of the two, this one was, man, I loved episode two, because this is they're doing in episode two what I hope they would do in this series, and that is they could take this concept that they have and they can do whatever they want with it, right? He can take this into any setting, situation, whatever. Episode two is very much outside the realms of the movies. It's very fresh for the series, for this franchise, and that it's not that familiar format of the films. This is a completely different approach to what he's doing. And without trying to give too much away, what I love about Ellie, episode two, Elliot, they draw so many parallels between Elliot, the character, and what he's doing in episode two, to what the protagonist, Peach Fuzz or whatever is Jeff. Jeff Daniel, I don't know if we know that's his true name or what. I don't know if that's ever been really, he calls himself Jeff Daniels.
Yeah,
And,
not
but he
the Jeff
draws,
Daniels.
which is, right, they pointed out in episode one, they say that, right? Not the Jeff Daniels. But yeah, it's pulling these parallels between what Elliot does in episode two and what Peach Fuzz or Elliot or Jeff, excuse me, Jeff does. And it's pretty cool the way they do it. And again, I love episode two. I enjoyed episode one, but episode two I really love, because it takes what he is and what he's doing and puts it into a different setting, and it works. It's different, and it's very clever, and it really lets Mark Duplass, because Mark Duplass has this uncanny comedic timing. It's unique, right? It's this. I don't know how to describe it. It's dry, matter of fact. It's very, I don't know how to describe it. It's not humor, like in your face humorous, but it's very, it's creepy, right? It's creepy. I mean, they named it perfect, And this second episode really lets him shine as an actor with what he does best, and how he is portraying this character, this series. Episode two is what I wanted out of this series. It's what I hope is coming for the main episode. I feel like it will be, but it does hold true to what I feel that the episode one was just to kind of ease people into the series that may not have seen the films, give them a kind of an overview of what it's like. And episode two is them really stretching their legs and artistically doing something a little different. And it's very clever. It works just in truckloads for me. And I absolutely love the episode two. Ike, what do you think?
No, absolutely. And before I talk about the episode, I 100% agree with what you're saying about Mark Duplass. I mean, he has like this weird, uncanny ability to like make any situation awkward or to then turn it on its head and make it funny. I would honestly put him in the same realm as like Steve Carell from like The Office. If Steve Carell from The Office were insane, you know what I mean? So I mean Mark Duplass, and like it's hard to like really put a nail like on what he's trying to do, you know what I mean? Like obviously I think everyone probably at this point knows that the very bare concept of the Creep movies is that he kills people, right? But not, and obviously I'm not going to talk to what is happening in these episodes to give spoilers, but I really hope that these episodes, and I think that this one kind of does it a little bit. They kind of help to explain why he's doing it, because that has never been explained before. Creep 2 touched on it very, very, very briefly. But so far with the Creep tapes, I feel like they have done a little bit better about trying to portray like maybe his motivation for it. And like you said in episode 2 with Elliot, it kind of dives a little bit more into the sort of the psyche, right? He's trying to find like comparisons between himself and other people, right? And obviously I'm not a psychologist, but a lot of times from what I understand, actual serial killers will do that. Actual serial killers will try and align themselves with somebody who is normal, right? They will try and find someone who is a normal person who does something similar to what they do, not in the exact same way like they're killing people, but they will find someone. And they'll sort of align themselves with it to sort of make sort of a psychological coping mechanism to kind of give them that normalcy, right? So it's very interesting that they dove into that with this one, where, like you said, Elliot's doing something, and what he's doing, Mark Duplass, the, main character in this, is kind of saying, yeah, you and I are not too different, you know what I mean? And yeah, it's very unique. And I mean, like you said, this is kind of what I was also hoping. I was hoping that they weren't going to recycle the same format, because yeah, it worked for the first two movies, right? That same format that we saw in episode one worked fantastic for the first two Creep movies. But I would be remiss if I said that watching the first episode of the Creep tapes, it made me a little hesitant, because I was like, okay, are we just going to recycle the same thing? But then we saw episode two, and I was like, okay, tape two, save this for me, because while the creep tape episode one was good, the second one was even better. And I hope that it's a cascading effect where each episode just continues to build on sort of like the lore and the mythos of this character. And hopefully by the end of it, we'll have a better idea about why this character does it. And like you said, he had all kinds of different names. Peach Fuzz, Jeff Daniels. He was Joseph in the first Creep movie. He was, I think, Aaron in the second one. You know what I mean? So he always has all these different names. So I feel like if they continue that trend of just giving him all these different names, that would be fantastic.
And again, I think they will. I think this series is going to, they're going to really stretch their artistic wings and explore lots of things that they can't do in a movie, right? Because they're you have to keep that same concept for, whatever, an hour to an hour and a half. And with this, right, they get a half hour episode to pretty much take their concept and their ideas wherever they want. Each episode they can change it, and it's working so far. And like you said, the first episode made me think, okay, it was good, but it's like, yeah, we've seen this. This is not different. But then after watching the second and loving it, it made me understand that, hey, maybe the first episode is just to establish this universe, this franchise. For those who haven't seen it, I get it now. I understand the context, and it makes me very excited for the next four episodes. And I absolutely just love We'll call him Peach Fuzz, right? Well, that's kind of the given under, the name that all is given. I love his, man, he's so playful and he's got this childlike glee with what he does.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to me to see it. And I love it. And it works. And he portrays it so well. Again, if you're, I mean, I highly recommend it that everybody watch Creep Tape. So far, two episodes. I love it. We are strong supporters of the Creep franchise. So I would recommend going back and watching the two movies and then diving into this. Again, I still stand by the fact that I don't feel like these films get enough appreciation for how good they are. They don't get enough discussion. I am hoping that this will do it. This is obviously getting a lot of social media and online buzz.
Yeah.
There's lots of people talking about it, so that is great. I love that. But I hope people are not just watching this series, that they are going back and watching the films. Because guys, this is really great stuff. And really, really strong work. Very creative. Very well executed. And so far, I know we're only two episodes in, we're only a third of the way through. So far, the Creep Tape series is only adding to it. It's only making it stronger.
Yeah.
That second episode, man, was just absolutely great. And I loved it. It hit on all the strengths of his acting and everything else, right? That it was so clever, so well done. All the strengths and how he portrays his character were just really, really nailed home in episode two and how well he does it. And I feel that there will be a little more, some more revelations of the man behind behind Peach Fuzz, right? Because I'm not gonna say, but there was a key, whatever, a key name, a key, not name, key attribute or something that was really, he mentioned several times in episode two, that he was, and I think it's more important than what we think it is coming out of two. It's weird because it's almost like Peach Fuzz is this guy, like searching for a friend, right?
Yeah.
Searching for a companion. And I really thought in episode two, I thought, hey, is Elliot going to kind of be a kind of a friend, kind of a companion through this series? Because that's almost, it felt like it was like this kindred spirit in a weird sense. And I wondered, but you'll have to watch to see where that went. So again, so far we're not going to rate it. We're just going to each week kind of, give our thoughts spoiler free. But two episodes in, I will say, without giving a rating, I will say so far, goddamn, so good. Good. They're
Yeah.
hitting it home. And this is what we've talked about, how horror can really utilize the series format to add to, and Creep's nailing it so far. And I'm super excited to see the remaining episodes. So before we move on, Ike, anything else you want to throw in there about Creep Tapes?
The only other thing I'd like to throw in there is that just to reemphasize, if you have not watched the original movies, 100% need to go ahead and go watch them.
Absolutely.
That's my biggest takeaway for anybody who has started watching these episodes or perhaps is thinking about watching them. While it is not required, I mean, it really should be, but while it is not required to understand the concept of the show, I do think that it is necessary watching just for a general populace, just a general rule, you know what I mean? Because like we said, this has been going on for a few years now. He's done two movies, and Shudder, obviously being the large, major entity it is for horror creators, is giving the Duplass brothers the ability to make this into a bigger and better entity. Because I can't remember his brother's name, but his brother is involved in the Creep Tapes. I think because I think at the end it says Duplass Brothers Productions. I think he's like a producer maybe. Yeah, Jay Duplass is the executive producer. So yeah, I mean it's fantastic. It's a family project, I guess you could say. And man, Mark Duplass is just so good. He's always good at this character. He's good in everything he does. He's a fantastic actor, but specifically as the creep, he is so good. So good.
And again, they've done a good job where you can watch Creep Tapes, not have to watch the movies. You can still get
Right.
a basic understanding. I mean, basically in episode one, they almost like they give the synopsis from IMDb of the movies, right? There's parts where, but it'll add, it really adds to the appreciation if you watch the movies. It
It
really
does.
does. So go watch them. You won't be disappointed. But okay, we'll move on. Besides the movie of the week that we're reviewing and Creep Tapes, Ike, did you watch anything else?
Excuse me. Yeah, I did. I said I had like a burp or something. Excuse me.
There you
but
go.
yeah, I did watch a couple things. So for some reason, I don't know what prompted me to jump on this watch binge, but I decided to watch all of the Scary Movie movies.
Oh.
I don't, maybe it's because we talked about how they're making another one.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about that last week or you and I just talked about that, but yeah, they are making another one. There are rumors that they're gonna spoof Art the Clown in this movie. So I was reading some stuff like that, and I was like, man, I haven't watched those movies in forever. So I went back and watched all of them. I also went and watched the Haunted House movies, which is like a spoof of like, Haunted House movies specifically. I believe it's oh Lord, what's his name? Marlon Wayans is the main guy in that one. So he, he does two of those. They're basically spoof movies, but so I watched all of those again. I don't know what prompted me to like want to watch all these like Wayans brothers movies, but I don't know. I love the Wayans brothers. They're actually, I would say probably some of the funniest like people in terms of spoof movies that have ex ever existed. And then I also watched Thanksgiving. I've got a busy week coming up, so we always try and watch Thanksgiving before Thanksgiving. Especially since, literally today is the 1 year anniversary of the movie, weirdly
There you
enough.
go. There you go.
Yeah, I wanted to watch it before Thanksgiving. And I know that we have a little bit of time coming up, but man, I got a lot of crap coming up. So I was like, I don't know when I'm gonna be able to watch this. So I was like, okay, watch Thanksgiving. And then I started a movie on Hulu called Pilgrim, which is another Thanksgiving themed horror film. Not sure why we wanted to watch that, but it's good so far. I haven't finished it yet, but it was good from what we were watching. And then only other thing, and I have to slip this in there because I would consider it a horror series. There's an anime called Attack on Titan, which is pretty horrifying. It has some scares to it. It's kind of like monsters. But it's also sort of like a political drama. It's super weird how they do it, but it's very good. Me and Kayla started rewatching it. We've watched it before, but we never got to finish the anime, so we're gonna go ahead and rewatch it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, a lot of gory fun.
There you go. I did really didn't watch anything horror related outside of the stuff for the show. I've had a busy week and really actually didn't watch a whole lot of anything. And so I really can't contribute to this segment, this section. So there you go. We'll just move on then.
Order up.
Here's one house special cheesy slasher. Enjoy.
And this is our cheesy slasher of the week. This is where Ike and I present to you a cheesy movie that you would might want to watch. And this week we present to you the movie Bad Taste. It was released June 21st, 1989, written and directed by Peter Jackson. Yes, that Peter Jackson, starring Peter Jackson, Terry Potter, Pete O'Hearn, Craig Smith, and others. And it is described as: the population of a small town disappears and is replaced by aliens that chase human flesh for their intergalactic fast food chain. This is, as you might suspect, this is Peter Jackson's first feature film. And Jackson made all the alien masks in his mother's kitchen, using her oven to dry the latex. The movie was shot on weekends over the course of 4 years. With Peter, and these are all his friends in New Zealand. It was shot in New Zealand. These are his friends. It was shot in weekends over the course of 4 years. This is what you get. You get Bad Taste. The movie is available to be watched on Amazon Prime. I have never watched Bad Taste, but I've heard lots about it. I know that I believe in Australia it was censored for a while, not available to view. I don't know why. I don't know the. What about Bad Taste is so bad in their eyes, but it is what it is. But this is not only kind of a cheesy horror movie, but also it, Peter Jackson's first feature film a long way from the Lord of the Rings trilogy and movies, etc. So check it out if you want. Again, it is available on Amazon Prime if you would like to give it a view.
Talk to us, Internet.
And now it is time for Talk to Us, Internet. This is where Ike and I present to you some listener feedback or just a talking point of the that we're seeing on social media or the internet. And as we are just on the cusp of award season, it is coming before you know it. It did make me think, and I did see someone that brought it up, and this is something that I've long thought. And it is the question, and I'm paraphrasing the social media post that I saw to fit this, but do award nominating groups overlook some stellar performances because they occur in genre films, particularly horror, so they don't give them proper nominations? I am going to just steadfast, hands down, say, yeah, they do. I don't put a lot of stock in award shows. I feel like, I don't know, it's weird. They're a little snooty with what they feel like they nominate films, and I'm not saying they're not good films or solid films or what have you, but I feel like they feel like there has to be a certain criteria, right? A certain actor in it, or a certain this and that, or an independent status, or whatever it may be. And they have trouble just accepting what the mass populace enjoys and accepts as a good film or a successful film. I don't know how you differentiate. They want so hard to state these are the films that they feel are high quality and artistic or accomplished, but they're not necessarily the films that are successful, the most successful. And I'm like, yeah, I understand to some respect, but if a movie does well at the box office, does that not quantify it to be successful enough to probably be nominated for some stuff? I think yeah. So I feel like they have always looked down their noses on genre films, science fiction films, superhero films, etc., but particularly horror. I don't feel like they can give a fair evaluation of horror films because I feel like they have this there's a bias against them. Ike, what do you think?
Because you and I have talked about this before. I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's specifically on the podcast or just like between the two of us. But I've long thought that these entities, like for instance, I feel like this year specifically, like I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Terrifier 3 deserves an Oscar nomination. It's quite the opposite. I love Terrifier 3, but I am not deluded enough to say to you that Terrifier 3 is an Oscar-winning movie. I would, however, say that a movie like Long Legs would deserve an Oscar nomination. Long Legs, and this is just a more recent example, but Long Legs, it sort of encompasses the feeling and the gist of a lot of other, I would say very popular horror movies, and specifically, the last horror movie that won like an Oscar nomination, or specifically won an Oscar award for Best Picture was Silence of the Lambs in 1992. And beyond that, there are some horror adjacent movies, I guess, like The Shape of Water, kind of. It's sci-fi-ish. No Country for Old Men, it's, I don't know. I don't think I would still call that horror, but the point I'm getting to, I think that there's just this weird stigma still around horror movies, even in today's day and age where, horror movies are so freaking popular. But there's still this weird, like, dividing line between what movies are acceptable for people to watch and what movies are not acceptable for people to watch. And I feel like horror movies sort of fall into that not acceptable category still, even though these movies are raking in the big bucks. You know what I mean? And honestly, I will hold all of my thoughts, because there is one thing that I always think about when it comes to horror movies, which is that horror movies statistically are more progressive usually. They are historically films that very forwardly have people of color, have the LGBTQ plus community and things of that nature. So I almost wonder if there is a an element of that to why they don't get nominated. I'm not saying that, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but it does seem weird that this specific genre is overlooked as much as it is when you have movies that are as good as Long Legs, when you have movies that are as good as Heretic. I would even say Heretic could potentially have that option of an Oscar nomination. You know what I mean? Like, there are other films, yeah, horror films, that I would say, hey, this is something. Also, I don't really feel like there's a horror category, if I'm not mistaken, as it pertains to those award shows. So it's just weird to me that it's not more talked about like that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I've long wondered why there's not a category for it. That does seem peculiar to me and whatever else. But you did bring up Heretic, and that was a movie I was going to bring up as well. Right? The movie is very clever. It's not a quote-unquote slasher. It's not gory or what have you. It's very well-written, very well-executed. While, yes, it is what I would call a horror movie, it does have lots of, you know, thriller-type attributes to it. It has a very accomplished actor in Hugh Grant in it. Some very strong up and coming actresses in it. So what would be holding back a movie like, you know, Heretic from, because I feel like it should be given some consideration. But will it be just automatically dismissed because it is quote unquote a horror film? I think probably, yeah. I don't think it will be given just cause. I'm hoping that over time, I know this is kind of a weird thing to say, but as members of the academies and groups are cycled out, so to speak, and new, younger members are in, you know, that maybe there'll be a more open-minded approach. But you did bring up the unique point, and what I've always wondered is why are there not unique genre categories for some of these films? And I'm not saying you have to have a bunch of categories, but why do you not have a best sci-fi film, a best horror film, a best whatever? Just, you know, why not? These genres are not going away. They've been around for long, long times, decades. And if you're not, you know, if you do not think they're worthy of being in your overall categories, then why not give them a little bit on their own to give them just, give them some recognition? Because I don't see how you can argue with the significance of horror films in this case because of the box office draw. I mean, they're making money. They've always made money. They still make money. It is consistently the most money-making genre out there. People are joking about it online saying, hey, if you're a production company or a film company, make a horror film, then you'll make some money, because pretty much every horror film that's released in theaters makes some money and does. I mean, so, you know, whether it's your thing or not, give them an opportunity, because I just feel like there's so many people that just lump it into, oh, it's this blood and guts, cheesy effects type deal, and that's horror. Well, you know what? That's not what horror is anymore.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That's definitely part of it. It's just that, you know, horror is so far developed, more than, you know, the 70s when we were using pea soup for blood, or, you know, and all that stuff. And like you said, and I want to touch on one thing, there are Oscar categories for things like best animated film. There are things like, you know, best foreign language film and things like that. So it's like, there are genres within the Oscar nomination process. So it's like, it is weird to me that you don't have more diversified genres, because then you have people who are able to potentially win Oscars who have really fantastic movies, and, you know, and where they may otherwise not. And not only that, because I'm sure that somebody out there will probably be mad that I said that Terrifier is not an Oscar award winning movie. Terrifier could still potentially win something for best practical effects, you know what I mean? Or something like that. Cause I'm pretty sure that is a category, you know. I would put it up for that. I was just saying that, I'm not going to say that Terrifier, the best picture, you know, possibility, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I was going to add to that.
But if you had a best horror film category, could Terrifier 3 get consideration? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Would it win? I don't know, right? Because it depends on what you're at, you know, what you think of it. There are some strong horror films. But at least then there would be a little chance for consideration. And, you know, I don't, I just, it's just weird to me. There's a, it's the one reason I just, I don't, I'm not a big proponent of awards shows because I feel like for what, whatever reason, they're overly pretentious. And I feel like, you know what, we've got to a point in time where get over it. It's like, we don't need that anymore. It's okay to, you know, if you look at some of your high, you don't look at your highest grossing films or theatrical films, or there's a large percentage of them. They're not snooty films, right? They're science fiction. They're horror. They're sci-fi. They're superhero. They're, come on, give them some props. I mean, look how strong superhero films have been for a while now, and they're still struggling to get even consideration. So it's weird to me. And, you know, and even if it's not your thing, does it hurt to acknowledge? Because
exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, some of these films that they nominate and that win and they acknowledge, they're not my cup of tea, but I can still acknowledge, hey, okay, they're probably pretty strong films. And, I guess I don't see the harm. You know, I'm not saying you got to put all these horror categories or genre categories on TV, right? They always have categories that they don't show on TV. So, I don't know. It's weird to me. I feel like it's just an out of date bias that doesn't need to be around anymore.
Agreed.
So, all right. Well then let's move on.
Seven Screams of Horror.
And it's time for our segment that we call 7 Degrees of Screams. This is where Ike and I are giving two actors in the horror, or just actors in general. And we have to connect them through films and other actors, et cetera. And we get points based on how many connections it takes. We can get some bonus points based on if it's strictly through connection through horror films. So much like the whatever it is, 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, or I don't know the actual name of it, whatever it might be. So this week, or this episode, Ike and I were given the actors Danielle Harris and Bill Skarsgård. So Ike, let's see, just refresh our memories and the listeners. Each actor in between the two is considered a point, correct?
Yes.
We don't count Danielle Harris. We don't count Bill Skarsgård. It's the stuff in between the two. So it's the number of actors between. And then obviously the films connecting said actors, where you get a little more if it is a horror film connection. So are you ready then to look into our connections of these two actors?
I sure am.
Okay. I have connected Danielle Harris and Bill Skarsgård through one actor. But it is not through either connection to Danielle Harris or Bill Skarsgård. It is not horror related. So, Ike, what have you got?
I have a connection between Danielle Harris and Bill Skarsgård through two actors, but they are both through horror films.
Oh, so this might make it interesting. So, okay, my connection between the two is through Brad Pitt. Danielle Harris was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt was in Deadpool 2 with Bill Skarsgård. So there is one actor connection, but no horror links there. So, so man, I always get confused on our own rating. Do we call that just 1 point? Correct? Is that correct?
How do we do this?
I get so confused.
I think if it's a horror movie connection, it's 1 point. If it's a non-horror movie connection, there you go. It's 2 points.
Yeah, because we're going by the least number of points is what you're looking for here, right?
Right. Yeah, like golf.
Yeah. Okay. So, like golf. Well, there you go. All right. So, since I connected the two through Brad Pitt in non-horror relations, So is that 2 points or is it four? No, it's 2 points, right? Correct?
Yeah, because you use basically because we always confuse ourselves. So based on what I'm recalling, in this case, it would be 2 points because you had 1 point of contact through non-horror movies.
Yes. Okay. So 2 points for me then. So, okay, give us your connections between the two.
So mine, I have Daniel Harris is in Scream with Tim Curry.
Okay.
Tim Curry is in the original It 1990 with Brandon Crane, who played the original Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Crane is in It Chapter 2 with Bill Skarsgård as a cameo in the beginning of the movie with the new Ben.
Okay. So you got two actors connecting the two, but they are both in horror roles, all of the connections. So that is a point apiece. So that is 2 points total for you as well. Correct? Yep.
That is correct.
So it is 2 points apiece. So this one we're calling a draw. We each have 2 points. Did it in two different methods. I did less connections, but non-horror related. You did two connections, more connections, but horror related. So therefore, we're looking at a draw.
Ooh.
And but there you have it. So if you can give us some kind of unique connection between the two out there, let us know. It's always fun to see how you connect these two actors. It seems like if I look back at our record here, it's withdraws the name of the game.
It really is.
Yeah, we've now had five Seven Screams of Horror. I won one, and then have drawn the other four. There have been draws in the other four. So, but that's okay. That's okay. It is a fun game. So, let us know on social media. How would you connect Danielle Harris and Bill Skarsgård? Do you have a unique connection? We would love to hear. And while you're stewing on that, thinking on that, coming up with that connection, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will have our news, birthdays, anniversaries, all that fun stuff. So stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to listen to their screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number two in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. Spread the news. Spread the news.
And welcome back with the news. All right, so first things first, we have the remake of the 80s Street Trash is now available video on demand. The movie is described as a group of homeless misfits must fight for survival when they discover a plot to exterminate every homeless person in the city. And what I just read to you is not the... I'm not going to say it. I was going to say something. Oh, man. What I read to you was not the current state of affairs. That was a film that came out video on demand, and it is the remake of an 80s film, so it's very timely. I have not seen the original, nor have I suck out this new film, but Dave, have you seen the original?
I have not. I've heard of it, never watched it. Now, I am intrigued to watch them both, so I do venture to guess in the near future, I'll give them both a shot. And give them a watch.
Absolutely. Sounds like a fun time. Maybe not for the homeless people, but it sounds like a fun time,
right.
Fun movie.
That's right.
I kid. But all right, very good. Moving on to Lady Gaga will be joining season two of Wednesday coming in 2025. Of course, season two of Wednesday will be about Wednesday Addams in a nursing home since it's been about 45 years since the first season came out. I'm totally kidding. But it has been a little while, so I'm very curious about how they're going to handle sort of the time jump between the two. Have to age up some of the characters a little bit. But yeah, that's cool. Lady Gaga will be joining, and we'll have a grand old time. But obviously, I'm very excited for season two of Wednesday.
Yeah, me too. And I like Lady Gaga. I'm not like a huge fan of her music. I can appreciate it, but I think she's really strong as an actress and has a great presence. And I'm looking forward. I think she can really fit into a series like this and work really well. So Yeah, I love the Wednesday series, and I think Lady Gaga will be a good addition to it.
Yeah, I really like. I mean, I know a lot of people seem to like not like her, but she. I like her. In that movie, A Star Is Born, she's really good in that movie. I've not seen Joker 2, Folie à Deux, but yeah, I've obviously heard a lot of the negative stuff about it. But I'm hoping that when I watch it on streaming, it's perhaps not as bad as a lot of people are saying it is. But we'll see. Anywho. Moving on to our last little bit of news here, Jason Reitman and Finn Wolfhard will be remaking the 1990s horror comedy Idle Hands. More information will be forthcoming, but I did actually see this on social media. I again have never seen the original Idle Hands. I had heard of it. I know that it has Devon Sawa and Seth Green in it, and I think somebody else that's pretty famous. I'm not sure who. But I've never seen this. Have you seen this one?
Yeah, long ago, and it's pretty good, but I think it is a good movie to do kind of a fresh take on, and to do a remake. I think it's one that really fits the bill to do something different with, or to do a new take on, and I it's pretty cool. These two, I think they could really nail it, and I think it'll work.
As I just looked at the cast list of the original, it has a Jessica Alba in it, Vivica A. Fox, and also has Fred Willard, who plays like a dad in like a billion different things. So that's cool. That's cool. I had never seen that before, but the original has sort of a stacked cast as far as the 90s goes. Very good. But all right, so keep an eye out for that in the future. But for now, let's move on to upcoming birthdays. Starting first, November 21st, 1944, we remember Harold Ramis, who is known for his role as Dr. Egon Spengler in the Ghostbusters. Harold Ramis obviously did a lot of stuff outside of Ghostbusters, but he is definitely most known for that. A very much a role that he will forever be remembered for. So yeah, happy birthday to Harold Ramis.
Yeah. And again, we talked about it in whichever movie it was. I can't remember the ghost, what they call the Ghostbusters movie. There was a nice little tribute to him or whatever. It was very well executed. Afterlife, that's what it was called, right? Afterlife.
Yeah.
Very well executed. His importance cannot be overstated to the Ghostbusters movies. And so, yeah. What again, even if it were, his whole. Even if his whole career was just centered around Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, that's still quite an accomplishment in my eyes.
Absolutely. Very good. So, happy birthday to Harold. And moving on to November 22nd, 1958, Jamie Lee Curtis, known for her roles in Halloween, The Fog, Prom Night, Terror Train, and many, many more. As we were talking about Oscar winners, she is an Oscar winner. She won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in Everywhere, Something, Something, All at Once.
Yeah, whatever.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is what it's called. There we go. Which that one, I will say, that one deserved an Oscar. Fantastic movie. But yeah, that Jamie Lee Curtis is iconic in so many ways. And Halloween obviously is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to her. She's done so much in the many years that she's been acting. So happy birthday to her.
Yeah, I mean, do you get as far as horror films, do you get much more iconic, right? Much more recognizable. I mean, when you think of the term Final Girl, when you think of the term Scream Queen, could any name come to mind first over Jamie Lee Curtis? Not only to mention what she's done in the Halloween films, but I mean, come on. I mean, The Fog, Prom Night, Terror Train, all whatever else. Come on. She is the prototype for this, and as far as horror goes, I mean, this her birthday should be an absolute national holiday for us.
No, absolutely. Well, actually, speaking of Jamie Lee Curtis, this is a little off topic, but you hear that she's doing a remake of Freaky Friday? Well, not a remake, or like a
Yeah,
sequel to the one that
a
she's
second.
in.
Yeah, I saw that.
I always thought that movie was so funny when I was a kid, so I will probably watch it. It'll probably just be cheesy, but I thought it was so funny when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's pretty cool. It it's shit. What's the co-star's name? Why am
Oh,
I sh
Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, Lindsay. I don't know why I shot a blank on her. To me, that's the best part of doing a second. It's you know, it's an opportunity for Lindsay Lohan to continue a redemption, right? She's got shit on quite a bit, and some of it deservedly, right? She's had some problems, some behavior, but everybody deserves a chance to rebuild. And okay, when I say everybody, within
Within reason.
yeah, and she's not done anything beyond that, but you know, I hope it really gives her an opportunity to launch back and have a great career moving forward. Because you know, she deserves a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. I mean, hopefully she gets the Robert Downey syndrome where, she, does a movie like Iron Man in this case. Maybe this will be her Iron Man. Maybe this will get her back in the game. I don't know. Anywho, got a little off track there, but yeah, I do agree. She deserves a second chance. She didn't do anything completely, outside the realm of redemption. Very good. But moving on to November 23rd, and we are going to jump way back in time to the 1880s, around the time the Civil War. I'm just kidding. That's about 60 years too late. But 1887, Boris Karloff, known for his role as Frankenstein and the Mummy. Again, we talk about iconic horror actors, actresses. I would say Boris Karloff is up there in terms of, someone who quite literally broke ground in the horror scene. I mean, this was the earliest form of horror when we talk about the universal horror and everything else. So obviously he is iconic for that just by itself.
Yeah, and we talked about Bela Lugosi being the definitive pop culture what you visualize Dracula to be. Boris Karloff is that version of Frankenstein. When you people picture Frankenstein in their head, you know, flat head, green, lumbering, that blank look in the eyes, bolts on the neck. That's Boris Karloff. That's his version. That's what you see. And you know, and on top of that, the Boris Karloff was he was just a great he was a great actor. He's very accomplished. He could have done a lot more. Not saying he didn't do great things, but I'm just saying, you know, could have been more at that time, more mainstream. But you know, this is where he hit his success, and he embraced it and did lots of things since then. After that, in the you know, I mean, he did lots of film, right? He was in the Mummy films. He was, you know, in Black Cat. He was, you know, several films, but you know, did the voice, the narration in How a Grinch Stole Christmas, the animated. That's Boris Karloff,
Yeah.
and everything else. So, just an iconic figure in the history of film.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man. And it's crazy to think that he was literally, I mean, obviously I know that the Universal horror movies were in the like what was it, the 1940s, right? Or is am I overstating that 1930s?
30s, yeah.
Yeah, 1930s. So, I mean, I guess it's not that crazy, but it's so weird to think that somebody born in the 80s was caught on film, like 1880s
Yeah.
is caught on film. That's
Yeah.
crazy to me. But anywho, moving on to not too far light later, November 24th, 1916, Forrest J. Ackerman, horror fan and collector, and the founder of the famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. So I have heard of mo famous Monsters of Filmland. But I actually am not super familiar with Forrest J. Ackerman. So Dave, you'll have to fill me in a little bit on this.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, like I said, he was a horror fan, right? Created the magazine, was a writer, editor, primary component between of it getting started and everything. But he also had this unbelievable horror collection of just everything, masks and just all everything. It was unbelievable in his home, and it was he was always the kind of guy that if a horror fan would just show up, he would let him in and show him around and show him all this stuff. I don't know, and maybe it's out there. I mean, I've just not researched it. I don't know what happened to his collection when he died. But it was, I mean, he literally had museum level, you know, collection of stuff. It was just such a film of such a fan of horror films. I believe he did co-write a film somewhere along the way. I can't remember what it was. You know, lots of different things. But you know, I mean, Famous Monsters of Filmland was iconic, and so many people through the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and so on. You know, I mean, that's how their connection to horror. And I'm pretty sure Famous Monsters now is kind of a little bit revitalizing under the guy, the Slipknot guy,
Yeah.
Corey Taylor, whatever his name is. I can't remember. Is that his name?
Yep, Corey Taylor.
And you know, that's he owns the rights to it and everything now. So it's cool to see it in the hands of another horror fan and kind of getting revitalized. But even, you know, even people that don't know Forrest, I mean, you know Famous Monsters and have at least heard that term, you know, but what's great is when people do this stuff, when it comes from your just a pure love, right? He didn't do it because he saw it as a money-making opportunity or to capitalize on a hot thing, man. He loved horror, and that's what he did. So, one of the biggest, greatest horror fans of all, and collectors of all time, and was just from everything you hear, was just a great dude that just loved sharing his passion for horror films.
And I mean, and to be fair, a lot of people are not open to that sharing. You know what I mean? A lot of, you know, modern collectors and everything else. I mean, you just look at the current scene of collecting and everything else, and all the scalpers and everything else. Just must have been a different time to want to be able to share the love. But I digress. Moving on to our last birthday for this week. November 25th, 1986. We have Katie Cassidy, known for her role in Supernatural, of course, remakes of Black Christmas and A Nightmare on Elm Street as well. So, of course, I do recall good old Katie Cassidy. But I mean, it's always crazy to me that we always seem to pull out somebody from Supernatural, if not something else. I think wasn't she in Arrow too at some point?
She was an Arrow.
Yeah, so I feel like I remember seeing her in there, but yeah, I mean, again, it's always crazy to me. So many supernatural connections in the horror world, but Katie Cassidy is one of them.
Yeah, she's great. I like her, right? She was the original Ruby in Supernatural.
Yeah.
She was good in the remakes. You know, I have opinions on the remakes, but she was good in them. But yeah, she was very good in Arrow. And from what I didn't see the entire series, but I saw a good chunk of it. But she's very talented, and like I said, I know her primarily from Supernatural, and she was great in it.
Yeah. I say I don't remember who she plays in the remake of The Nightmare, but I do believe that she's like one of the friends of the main protagonist. I don't think she is the main protagonist. But she's like a friend of one of the people, like the main protagonists in that movie, which weirdly enough, another person that we recently saw, Kyle Gallner, is in the Nightmare remake as well. So he was in Smile too. But there you go. Well, happy birthday to Katie. And now we're going to move on to our one and only upcoming movie anniversary this week, November 21st, 1931, Frankenstein. Oh man, cannot beat Frankenstein. Frankenstein, we were just talking about the OGs. We were talking about, you know, specifically we were talking about Boris Karloff, but Frankenstein, again, one of the OGs, not only in terms of film, but the original Frankenstein book. You know, Mary Shelley, it is considered a, you know, the one of the first pioneers, if not the first pioneer of the modern horror genre. And of course, Frankenstein. You know what I mean? I love Frankenstein. It's one of the few Universal horror movies that I can very distinctly recall. Obviously, I remember Dracula, but I just feel like I really remember Frankenstein much more vividly than I do some of the others.
I love Frankenstein. One of my favorite films of all time. I will always say that, you know, if you watch Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, it's a great kind of 1-2 punch of films. Boris Karloff is great in it, but it's iconic. I mean, it is what we think when we think of Frankenstein, and I love it. One of my favorite films, to me, holds up to this day. That if you watch it, I think it's just a great movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So, happy birthday to Frankenstein, or should I say Frankenstein's monster?
That's all
I
right.
kid. But moving on now to some upcoming releases. So, some good news for our friends out there who love the public domain horror stuff that's been being pumped out lately. But the new public domain horror movie coming in January 2025 is Popeye. You heard that right. Our favorite Sailor Man is about to get down and dirty. The latest character is to get, he's going to get that horror treatment, of course. And, you know, it's so exciting. But he is described, or it is described as, the legend of Popeye haunts a group of counselors as they intend to open a summer camp. More information in a trailer is expected soon, but it sounds like Popeye is being crossed over with our friend Jason Voorhees a little bit, torturing some summer camp people, and that's always a fun time. So, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely watch this. I will watch any public domain horror film, even if it is doo-doo, I will still watch it and give it a shot.
Me too. I'm curious what happens when this version of Popeye eats the spinach. but I mean, I love Popeye. I love the cartoon. I love the comic strip. I love. I even love the Robin Williams film. And I love Popeye. This is a pretty cool idea. I don't know. I mean, about Popeye as kind of a villain. I guess that's weird. But yeah, I can see it. Right? It'll work. But I look forward to seeing it, seeing how they do it, how they portray it. And again, I'm a sucker for this public domain stuff. It's just such a fun thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the live action Popeye as well. It has Shelley Duvall as Olive Oil.
Oh yeah, I love it.
And I mean, Shelley Duvall is so good in that movie too. I mean, she's so good in everything she does. But it's a shame that she didn't get to do more in her time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're talking about Popeye. But yeah, I love Popeye. Popeye character is so great. When I was a kid, I used to love spinach because I would watch Popeye.
Mm-hmm.
And that love for spinach has grown in my old age, because I say old age, but I'm only almost to my 30s. But I love greens, like, you know, collard greens and everything else, which started with that love of spinach. Again, I could do a whole food podcast, but I love like turnip greens with some vinegar in it. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good.
Kale?
Don't get me started.
Oh,
kale. Yep. I love it. Kale, like with potatoes and sausage, like in a crock pot. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Don't get too fat guys talking about food. But anyways, Popeye
right.
gave me my love of spinach. I remember, don't they have a brand of spinach that is called Popeye or has like his name
yeah,
on it or something?
Yeah. At least, yeah, I guess. I don't know if they still do or not, but yeah, once upon a time they did. I would assume that they still probably do. I don't know. But yeah, once upon a time they did.
It's weird because like I'm gonna have to try, and because like for me, like I love Winnie the Pooh, but like watching Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey never didn't like didn't really bother me, because like I didn't watch Winnie the Pooh a shit ton growing up. And same thing with like, you know, the Steamboat Willie stuff, and the same thing with like, you know, Peter Pan and stuff. But honestly, I'm not gonna say it's gonna bother me, because it won't, but like I wonder if I will be perturbed at all by watching Popeye kill people, just because like I have a lot of fond memories of going to my grandma's house watching Popeye, eating spinach while watching Popeye nonetheless.
You're fully invested.
I am fully invested. That's a weird like core memory I have, because you know my grandma, she
yeah.
buys the most obscure shit. And she used to buy the Popeye brand spinach, and we used to
yeah.
watch an old VHS tape of Popeye at her old house. And we would eat dinner and like watch Popeye, and we, you know, that's how she got me to eat my spinach, I guess, is to watch Popeye do it.
But, tricky.
yeah, for real, for real. But hey, I love spinach now, so I guess it worked fantastically. So
yeah, but you know, Popeye was never like this squeaky clean kind of hero guy, so I
no.
think it could work with him being a villain.
If he I feels, think so.
If he feels like he's bratty kids or doing something to, I don't know, whatever, encroach on the purity of the seas or something, I don't know. That I can see him taking some vengeance, and I can see rooting for Popeye in this situation.
I mean, it's kind of bad, I guess, but it's kind of like when you kind of root for like Winnie the Pooh and Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. You know what I mean?
Sorry.
I mean, to be fair, the whole you know, synopsis for that film is that Christopher Robin just basically said "fuck you guys" and like let them be, you know. So like they started to starve and stuff. So I mean, it's kind of fucked up if you think about it. But I digress. If you haven't watched Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey, that's another good one to go ahead and watch before you watch Popeye. But good stuff. Anywho, before we get too far on that rabbit hole, because I will do that, talking about spinach over here, Devin is coming to Screambox on November 26th. Now, this isn't a person named Devin. Maybe it is, but I don't think so. It is the directorial debut of Jersey Shore's JWoww. Holy shit. Haven't heard
I
that.
know.
Haven't heard JWoww in like a decade. Wow. Okay. Anywho, that was like it's like a freaking flashbang. Like reading the words directorial debut of Jersey Shore's JWoww is like reading a tongue twister. Just doesn't seem right. The movie is described as after their daughter vanished from an asylum, Devin's parents engage five explorers to investigate the abandoned site years later via a cryptic website. Unaware of the sinister one-way journey and terrifying, deadly experience awaiting them. That was a very wordy synopsis, but I do like this concept. I love abandoned stuff like that. I feel like in my free time, sometimes I'll watch people do go and explore like abandoned buildings and stuff like that on YouTube. In my younger years, I had visited a handful of abandoned buildings. It's interesting to I love seeing that in film, if that makes sense. That's why I like some of these movies like Grave Encounters, where they go to like an abandoned asylum or something. So that in of itself hooks me because I love that concept. I love that atmosphere. But also it's very spooky, and I think that there's going to be some supernatural stuff happening in there.
Sure, yeah. I'm just curious, how does one get a cool nickname like JWoww? What do I got to do? I don't know what it would be, but I need.
I think you need to almost overdose on self-tanner and get a Jersey accent, perhaps, if you would like to be called
That
DWoww.
may be out then. Yeah, I think the listeners ought to give us cool nicknames like this. So if anybody's got any ideas of us out there, go for it. I don't know. JWoww. I mean, how does that even happen? How do you even come up with JWoww? That's just weird.
I mean, it's like the same thing with like Snooki, the situation. Like, I
Yeah,
think, like, where the hell did they get these from?
why do they all have to have nicknames? What's happening in Jersey where
There's some
I don't know. Oh well.
weird shit that happens in Jersey, man.
Sure does, yeah.
But anywho, before we get too far down the rabbit hole of d besmirching the name of Jersey, I don't know if we have any Jersey followers out there, but. If we do, I apologize in advance. But anywho, go ahead and give us a little pause here. But while we do that, go ahead and follow us on social media. It's a perfect time for you to do so. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will go ahead and have our f official review of Black Cab. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/WrasslePod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
All right, and we're back here on Listen to Their Screams. It is review time. And we are reviewing Black Cab. It was released November 8th on Shudder, written by Virginia Gilbert, directed by Bruce Goodison, starring Nick Frist, Sinéad Carlson, and George Bukhari. First of all, no matter what this movie was about, no matter what it was, whatever else, you say the name Nick Frost, I'm like, okay, I'll give it a watch. I love Nick Frost. I was intrigued by the possibility of Nick Frost playing kind of a villainous, creepy character. I will say, after watching this movie, he pulled it off very well. He was able to pull off very, creepy very well. He did it at the beginning. It was a build process in this film. It was very subtle to begin with, and then became more and more. again, this is all spoiler free, but you know, things are happening through this film. You know, I mean, yeah, is he villainous? Yeah, but I don't, you know, it's there are circumstances in this film. Do I think he is? I don't know. I don't even know if he's the most villainous character in this film, to me.
Yeah, I don't
To be
think so.
fair, yeah, but I God, I love Dick Frost. I just the way he portrays his characters. There's just such, and maybe it's because he takes on roles that just feel natural for him, right? You can just see him fitting in, right? You can see Nick Frost driving a cab in England and picking people up and doing this. And but I do love the way this movie kind of builds, right? Where it starts off just him. Just being this what appears to be a jovial cab driver, right? Chatting it up. I think he talks music a little bit, does some things, right? Just seems like this really fun guy driving a cab. And then you know, things start happening. He starts saying things that, you know, it's a little peculiar and whatnot. But and then things build from there. And I just think he really builds the character to go along with that storyline. And the way he portrays it, and he does a really great job. The entire cast does. It's and again, it's not a deep cast. It's primarily we're primarily talking three characters for the majority of the movie, and but it is well done. I did enjoy the movie. I don't feel that there's anything super groundbreaking original about the film. It is well executed, it is well done, well shot, well acted. All the typical little check boxes we talk about. Do I think it's just super overly original? Not necessarily, but it's okay. It's not like they're directly ripping off anything or what have you. I can kind of see how this film just went to direct to streaming. This is that kind of film that has that feel, right? That and it was, I think it was a wise choice. I don't know if theatrically it would have done that great, but when it's a release on Shudder, it's a lot of perception, right? It feels like a much more important thing. It feels more important getting a release on Shudder than I think it would have felt if it had been a theatrical release. And I think that helps it. So I mean, I enjoyed the film, enjoyed everything about it. But it's not one that I'm going to go out and just say, oh my God, everybody's got to run and watch this because it was so spectacular. But it is a movie that I would say people should watch. It's because it's a fun watch. So I again, I don't want to give a lot of details. It's hard to, this is kind of a hard film to talk about and not give away some crucial plot stuff, because I don't really want to give away what happens in the movie per se. So it's kind of hard to really converse about without giving something away. So I what do you think of it?
I think that I think that this movie, so I okay, let me preface all of this by saying that I did not hate this movie. I did not like ov overly enjoy it. I did get a little bored at some points just because I felt like there was a lot of slow building to this. I feel like they took a lot of time doing some things that they didn't really need to take the time that they took to do it. So take that into consideration with what I'm about to say. The movie was just all right. I think Nick Frost is by and large probably the best part of this movie. Just because his character just it seems like you said it seems very believable. I have a very I mean I feel like he maybe at a previous time in his life maybe moonlighted as a cab driver or something. I don't know. But yeah, I mean he did a fantastic job playing this sort of, weird character. But like you said, he wasn't completely weird. He was fun and, energetic at first and then, sort of jolly and, as they say, jovial. But it sort of trickles down into sort of this weird place and, he definitely turns that on its head a little bit. I do think that the movie could have been better, had they perhaps cut out some of the unnecessary things about this movie, because there were some, let's say, traveling moments in this movie that I felt were a little overworked, and definitely took away from the overall feeling of the movie. I think that if you had somebody other than Simon Pegg in the role as the cab driver, I do genuinely think that that would have been to the detriment of the movie. So what I mean by that is that if you were to remove Simon Pegg, not Simon, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost from this movie, I get the two mixed up. They're in everything together. I was really expecting Simon Pegg to hop out at some point. I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, if you took Nick Frost out of this movie, I definitely think it would have hurt. It would have hurt.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes that's a good thing, right? Sometimes it's like this role was made for this person, and anybody else playing this role would have been absolute horseshit, right? Like, there's that feeling. For instance, and I'm just gonna throw this out there: Kane Hodder, right? Kane Hodder is probably my definitive and favorite person who has ever played Jason Voorhees, right? I just love the way he looks and the makeup. But and I think that certain films that are made within the franchise, him not being Jason, does hurt the film a little bit because I like his mannerisms. So there's like that, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh yeah, I prefer him in that role. But then there's things like Robert Downey Jr., right? I do not think that there's a single person alive that could have played Tony Stark in 2008 when this movie came out, or 2007, whenever the fuck movie came out. So like that, for instance, that's kind of what I feel like this movie is like. I feel like if Nick Frost had not been that person, it would have completely ruined the movie. And I think it would have been to the movie's detriment. So with that in mind, it was a small cast. The other people in this movie did okay, but I feel like it was just, they're really struggling. I felt like I was watching people struggle to like act in a movie. And I don't mean that in like a negative way per se. It just felt weird. And, you know, I like you said, the story fine part of it was perfectly fine. I thought the story was interesting. It's just, I got kind of lost with some of the monotony and some of the weird stuff that they were doing on the sides and everything else. And I don't know. I feel like if they would have cut down some of it and maybe put in a little bit more, pertinent dialogue, perhaps, or maybe a little bit more exposition, or I don't know. I just felt like some of it was, there was something missing that could have made this movie even better. And I do 100% agree that this probably would not have done very well in a theater setting. I feel like putting it on Shudder and streaming it that way was a much better decision than trying to get this into a theatrical release. But other than that, it wasn't on a horrible movie. It just, there were some things that fell short to me, and then there were things that really exceeded to me. But all in all, Nick Frost really made this movie a lot of fun for me. So I do have to give it credit there that they chose a fantastic person to play the cab driver. I love seeing Nick Frost in just about anything. But it was cool seeing him in sort of a different role than what he normally does. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm rambling at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Again, like I said, there's not a whole lot to be said about the movie. To say any more, would you be giving away a lot of details that we don't want to give away?
Right.
It's an okay little watch. Again, nothing spectacular, but it's kind of what you expect for kind of a streaming release. This is what you look for. Not horrible, but you know. Clearly, there's a reason why it's, you know, at this level, at the streaming release, right? And you are spot on without Nick Frost. And this might just be kind of a biased opinion, even on my, I will own that. Without Nick Frost, I don't know, my interest would have waned a lot. But I do love Nick Frost. So,
yeah.
So, all right. Again, not much to say about it. It's an okay watch. It's on Shudder, so nobody's got anything to lose by giving it a shot and giving it a watch. And I hope people will. Like we mentioned earlier, it's not that there's nothing super original about it. It's okay. So let's rate this thing. Ike, out of 5 screams, what are you giving Black Cab?
I think for Black Cab, I initially thought to myself, you know, this one, it's a struggle because like I want to just give it a 3, but part of me is like, but there are a lot of movies that are 3s that like I enjoyed a lot more than I enjoyed this movie. So that being said, I do think that I am unfortunately going to have to give this a 2.5 out of 5. For me, it just, I don't know, maybe it just was not the kind of movie that I normally would like. I don't know. Maybe there's just something about it that just struck me the wrong way. But yeah, it's a 2.5 out of 5 for me. Not a horrible movie, but I won't be going out of my way to rewatch this anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. By our standards of three being a, kind of a middle of the ground, enjoyable movie, that, if I was scrolling through and it came up, I would give it consideration of, hey, I might watch that again and give it another shot. Yeah, I don't think this would be there. I don't see me having any urge to ever rewatch it. And I know that sounds horrible. I know that's probably not the most, the best advertisement to try to get tell people to watch it, but it's worthy of one watch. I think it's okay, but yeah, it's not one that has a lot of rewatch value for me. There's just not enough there. So yeah, I think, but because Nick Frost in it, I think yeah, I would give it a 2.5 as well, out of 5. Without Nick Frost, it would probably drop it down to a 2. I think he adds. You just again, I enjoy him enough that it adds that half a scream for me. So there you have it, Black Cab. It's available on Shudder. We're giving it a 2.5 out of 5. Everybody go watch it. Let us know what you think of it. Next episode, we will be reviewing the movie He Never Left, which I believe is available video on demand. I don't think it's on any streaming platform right just yet, but I think it's that's forthcoming. But it's called He Never Left. Plus, we will be talking about episode 3 of the Creep Tapes, which I am super excited to see. We want to say thank you to our wives and then all of our listeners and followers for all of your support and interactions. So, Ike, before we close this episode out, anything you want to throw in there?
Well, it's that time of year. It's just the season. Next time that you guys catch up with us, which will be next Thursday, it'll be Thanksgiving. So,
That's right.
we'll probably, give you some well wishes on that day. But between now and then, of course, make sure you guys are being safe, traveling. I know a lot of people travel around this time of year, and be safe. You know what I mean? Don't do anything stupid. If you're tired, pull over, get a hotel, whatever the case may be. Just stay safe out there, guys. This is like the prime time of the year to get into accidents and for people to get hurt and everything else. So, just stay safe, stay healthy, and have fun. You know what I mean? That's the big thing. Have
That's
fun.
right.
I'm sure a lot of us are having some time off around this time of year, so have some fun. You know what I mean? Get a little crazy. Not a lot of crazy, just a little crazy, and just have a good time.
Yeah, it's all about spending some time with those that you care about, whether it be family, friends, or whether if it's just yourself. That's okay too. No judge it. If you're just a person who just needs to recharge and spend some alone time sheltering from the world, that's okay too. Just eat something good. Doesn't have to be Thanksgiving food. Whatever you enjoy, just eat well, relax. Spend time with those you love, and recharge because that's what it's all about. And everybody gets so caught up in the hecticness of travel and shopping and cooking and everything else. Just don't forget to just take a breath and relax a little bit because that's the biggest problem in the world. People forget to just unplug and think about themselves and spend some me time and take a breath and unwind. And it's okay to do that. It's okay to take care of yourself. And if you have to use a holiday to do it, so be it. Do it. And don't be ashamed of that. So, not to mention that Thanksgiving will also be that is also my wife Monica's birthday. So
It is.
that's right. So that's coming up as well. We'll discuss that, I'm sure, in the next episode.
It's very
But
timely. She loves Thanksgiving.
that's right. As do I. But until then, like I said, next episode, we'll be reviewing He Never Left plus episode 3 of Creep Tapes. Go watch those. It is on Shudder. They are enjoyable. Go watch the movies as well. Cannot recommend it enough. But until that episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.